Live from Victory Burger, inside the Circa Resort and Casino, it's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Hey, here we go, Circa. Cofield and Company, Victory Burger, you heard it. This is one of the great places in town to watch the Super Bowl. They're going to have a big game bash. Not just one, the entire property at Circa is going to be rocking and rolling. Couple Sundays from now, reserve your spot, because walk-ins will be a little bit tough on the day of the Eagles and the Chiefs game. CircaLasVegas.com, Big Game Bash. Search Big Game Bash. Alex White is here. Vanessa's helping out back in our Finley Toyota studios. It is Griffin. I have come out on fire every day, and I'm going to try to stay calm today, but Griffin has me already worked up. So before we tear into Griffin, Alex, I haven't seen you in a while. Your birthday last week?
Birthday last week, yes.
All right. Happy 29th.
Thank you.
Good job on that. I don't remember most of the time who I speak to on the spot. Like, I talked to someone who was like, yeah, it was her birthday, and they saw you somewhere. I don't know where it was, though. Did you actually go out? You celebrate? You hang out somewhere?
Yes, I did. I was actually downtown.
Okay.
I was here because Frank Nicotero had a show.
Oh, that was it. Yep.
Headliner.
Frank,
yep.
From South Point Studios.
Oh, so it was Matt.
Matt and Everett. It could have been someone else.
Oh.
Never know.
Interesting. Matt was at the
star.
Show, too.
Top female handicapper in the entire world. When Alex shows up, people know her from her second place finish in the Circa Invitational this year, and also multiple outright wins of last man standing. So did it get crazy?
It was pretty fun.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Did it get crazy?
It was pretty crazy.
Oh, yeah. All right, Griff. All right.
Yeah, let's go, Alex.
Use your imagination. I thought the answer would be now. Nah. Now, we stay calm.
I don't do shots, but that doesn't mean other people weren't doing shots. So.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
I don't do them often. I'll do them every once in a while. I definitely did do them the last couple of days.
You did do them?
No, I will do shots. I didn't do them the last couple of days because, as I told the audience, I was in Logan, Utah, which that city doesn't mesh with me. You feel like a criminal if you get a shot. Griff, of course, is very familiar with Utah. I hadn't even noticed this, but the aforementioned Neverett was like, look over there. Look at the way they pour the drinks. They got the gun, and it's heavily regulated. I'm like, all right, I don't want to get cuffed. It's just, there's a weird vibe there. Now, I am heading to Reno and then eventually New Orleans, so things change there. I thought I was headed, Alex, towards a split with some of these wonderful cities around the Mountain West Conference, and I kid because I care. I like certain things about Logan and Laramie. Laramie, a little different than Logan. Things I don't like, but I thought we were headed towards a split, but there's more building momentum, certainly in the rumor mill, about what the Mountain West Conference and the Pac-2, mm-hmm. Pac-7, is going to be. So we're going to hit on that in the 5 o'clock hour. One of the great guys in the West who does radio, Monty, is going to fill us in on what he's heard. And, again, kind of a reality check of where we are out here. Because the fan interest in realignment and Pac-2, 7, Mountain West resorting, the reality is not... I think people are kind of lost in terms of focus. They're all fighting. We're all fighting this battle within.
Right.
Kind of something we do in this country now, right? But the fight is not really, should not be amongst us in this area. We're wasting time. But like, we've lost our focus, you know?
Yeah. So that'll be good for him to clue us in, because I actually need a little bit of a help in where we're standing and
well, that's
what's
the
happening.
Thing. Where are we standing?
Exactly.
I mean, it's mostly rumor mill stuff. Everyone's kind of being quiet about it, which I do like. I do like that. So, we're coming up on, I guess, safe to argue, the biggest media event that we have each year in this country around sports. And that is the Super Bowl. And every year I go to the Super Bowl, most, you kind of see new wrinkles and new approaches. And as I've said many times before, they used to hate us because they ain't us. And what I'm talking about is TV. I said ain't us, not anus. I talk about TV and the dislike of what we do in sports talk radio, which is we naturally embrace debate. Now, they bastardized the whole thing. They stole it, and then they do fake embrace debate. New Orleans will be the home for that. And the great thing is, and I will actually pat myself on the back for this one, When we go to the Super Bowl, we can talk football the entire time. We can talk about the game the entire time. We can talk about NFL topics the entire time, college football topics, New Orleans, the scene, the food. We'll have celebrity chefs on. Like, whatever we feel like doing and we think is important, what we're going to do. But I do feel like a couple days in the week, there's a little bit of topic fatigue. Like, people can't come up with ideas.
Right.
And our job is to come up with ideas. And Griffin had a couple of stories coming out of the gates here, and we've been kind of compiling stories because we've been so busy on stuff to talk about. Griffin, I want you to tell me, you sent over something that you were getting worked up about with Cam Newton, and this is the kind of debate, like, I don't mind doing for a couple of minutes, but this is the kind of debate that will be on, like, 15 different TV shows. Cam Newton said, what about winning an MVP versus winning a Super Bowl?
Yeah, no, this guy recently came out as a me guy, and old Cam Newton said that...
Recently came out as a me guy. How about he continued to be a me guy?
He's now public with it that he's a me guy. And he basically said on First Take, when asked, about the value of a Super Bowl win and an MVP, which he has a Super Bowl appearance, no win, he basically said he would not trade his one MVP in exchange for a Super Bowl victory. Basically saying it's more valuable to be an MVP / All-American because it gives you more value in asking, more from your teammates. And frankly, it's one of the more ridiculous statements I've heard in my life.
Okay. Well, let's jump in on this because I have my opinion about it. And a lot of this is about legacy, what people remember you as. What is more important, being the MVP of the league or winning a Super Bowl?
I mean, it depends. You look at Cam Newton's career. In fact, look at just Cam Newton's appearance in his Super Bowl. Everyone after that Super Bowl made tons of jokes about the end of the game where Cam fumbled, and instead of jumping on the ball, he just simply, he was a little hesitant of it. And that basically resulted in the Panthers losing that game. And so, I mean, if you just care about being, the biggest name possible during your time in the NFL, then sure, an MVP is great. All-pro nominations are great. But in the long run, guys who've won Super Bowls, no MVPs and just strictly won Super Bowls, those are the guys who are remembered. Those are the guys who are cherished by their teams. Look at Nick Foles, for example. They built a statue for that man for that win.
I saw BDN standing on the streets of Philly, and people were taking a picture of him, like him and his wife. Like, hey, he's out here. Here's BDN. Nick Foles. I think it's more important to win the Super Bowl. If you told me, hey, the MVP led to, like, you could quantify it, this much more money. Like, if it was, like, hundreds of millions of dollars, then, yeah, I'm going to go with the angle of taking the money. But I don't think it helps you make more money. I think the Super Bowl is more valuable at the end of your career. And this isn't to say, like, I'm not going to, unless you got one of you guys going to say, maybe Alex will, like, I'm not going to say, well, I think you are, right? That's what you're saying, Griffin. He values personal accolades over winning. What do you think, Alex?
That's definitely what he is saying. And I think that you can still have an MVP season without winning the award. There's four guys that we're all talking about this year that we'd all be okay with winning the award. Three quarterbacks and one running back who is on his way to a Super Bowl, who put that and his team ahead of it, ahead of beating a record. Saquon Barkley did not play in the last game of the year because he wanted the team and took that first and wanted to make it to a Super Bowl. So
when I hear like a note, say 15 years after someone's career or an era, and they're like, this guy only won one MVP. He didn't win any MVPs. I have no idea. Kobe's brought up. Kobe, for all I know, could have 7. He could have 0. Jordan could have 24. He could have 2. At the end of his career, we're going to remember Lamar Jackson being awesome. But for legacy purposes, and this is not to say he's not going to be considered great for this era, but there are people who look at Dan Marino, and I stared him right in the face at the Super Bowl last year, and I said, you didn't win a Super Bowl! I didn't do that. Actually, I told a sob story about the fake spike game, the Jets and the Dolphins, how I was out of the sports bar, and I told this whole story, and it was like, the end of the story was, Jets lose, fake spike, I walk out of a bar all pissed off, I walk across the street, my car is out there, and it's got a flat tire. And I said to him, I go, I just wanted to put it in neutral, lay down, let it roll over me.
Oh my.
And he's like, that's tough. Just deadpan me. Just like, tough break. Like, you son of a...
No remorse.
But he... Yeah, no remorse at all. Yeah. But that is part of his legacy, that the Dolphins couldn't get it done. So I think on this show, we all think that winning a Super Bowl is, that's the ultimate goal. It is one of the legacy measures of being a great quarterback. I'll be honest, I didn't even know that. Did Cam win one or two? I don't care. Like, a couple years later, it's a nice argument for gambling. But, and it'll be, what is it? Is it this Friday they do the NFL honors? I think it's the AP award, and then we'll find out who won this, you know, gambling angle. I don't remember a couple years later.
It's really funny that you brought that up, though, and Lamar Jackson, because I was actually thinking of my dad, who has been in the sports betting industry his entire life since he could bet, and maybe before, and he never knows with MVPs. He'll always ask me, like, who won? Did Lamar Jackson win MVP last year? Like, he does not.
Does he do that live on the air?
No.
It's one of my favorite things.
I don't know.
About your dad, yeah. Your dad, when he does solo, is like looking up stuff the whole time.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, Kenny, we do that. Griffin, you have noticed that since you've been on the show, right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. No one on the show has any restraint. If we have two people on the air, three people on the air, there's a question, we don't know, everyone starts looking. And then I stop, and I'm like, no one's going to talk. Right? The most important thing became looking that up. But, yeah, I don't remember stuff like that. Like, if you ask me the mid-level quarterbacks, I'm being nice at the time, and, like, who got it done. Like, I know the four or five guys where you're like, they are not all-time greats, but they got a Super Bowl.
Yep.
And most of it's due to the team, but in that spot, they delivered. They played an efficient game. So, whatever. That's Cam's deal. And here's my point, though, to go back to about 4 minutes ago, my setup. What we're doing in the media is we want to produce interesting sports talk. I personally want to talk about some issues. If things need to be attacked or addressed, I want that out there. Everything doesn't have to be a debate. Everything doesn't have to be about clicks. I had someone come at me like 2 weeks ago about Tracy Wolfson after the Bills and Ravens game in the playoffs, asked Josh Allen, hey, what's going to be different this time against the Chiefs? And he kind of soft-patted it and didn't really answer. And someone's like, oh, ridiculous question. And all these people do when they ask questions is clickbait. And I'm like, maybe Tracy was instructed, like, hey, come up with a viral video. I doubt it. I think she thought at that moment, that's an interesting question. If he answers it, he does. If not, he doesn't. That's the way I approach it. But maybe I'm not doing my job. Maybe we are supposed to be doing clickbait. I'll say this. Cam Newton, whether he knows it or not, is producing something, Griffin, every week that is irking you. So if you're the target audience, right? And he irked me, right? He irked me with the stupid, and I don't even like Jason Whitlock, but I like fat guys. But when Cam Newton was talking about, you know, who gets to talk about hot women, and what did he say about Whitlock and his boobs? He blurted out. He's like Jason Whitlock, because Whitlock said huge rack when he was referencing Joy Taylor, and then Cam Newton's like, you have a huge rack, Whitlock. I'm like, kind of a good line, but he also said, hey, when I see you face to face, keep that same energy, and that got me going. So, like, as a media member, he's producing some stuff, Griffin, that he's supposed to produce.
Yep.
He got you, man. He got you, and then he got us, and we talked about it in the air.
I'm right in his grasp. I can't help it. I'm now obsessed with this new Cam Newton. It still uses that ridiculous freaking font that he does in any social media post. I hate that.
Now you're annoyed at the font. Okay.
Who isn't? I can barely read it. But, no, I mean, then look at what he did with Dwight Howard's ex-girlfriend, having her on to the podcast, and then having J.R. Smith comment and say, you know, this is corny. You're having a black woman come on to bring down a black man. It's just not the way. And then Cam Newton responds back, and basically the same thing to Whitlock, said, keep that same energy. I'm not hard to find. Like, ever since he's gone into the media, it's all confrontation. It's all just say anything to get everybody pissed. He's doing a good job at it.
I find the keep that same energy fascinating. I actually hope he, like, flips over a table on someone if someone pushes him. If he does any guest spots, which he probably won't on Radio Row. It's too bad you're not going, Griffin, at whatever you are now. How much you weigh?
6'5". About 238 now. I'm going down.
Man, now you're not coming on the road for sure. But at one point you were 6'5", 260. I think Paul Gutierrez is with our crew. Paul's a little older, but he's also like a Taekwondo guy. I wonder what Paul would do in that situation, because he was going to fight Derek Carr until at a media session when Derek Carr told him to calm down. And Paul from the back of the room was like, or what? And then Willie interjected with a question to end it.
My God.
Yeah, you can't fight Derek Carr. That's a terrible look.
Well, I think it would be a terrible look for Derek Carr at 33 years old to go attack a guy my age.
I don't think Derek Carr would, though.
I don't think he would either. No, I don't think
he would even want it that confrontation.
But I think Derek Carr was like, if I say, you know, dial it down to a media member, the media member's going to go, oh, okay. And Paul was like, no, not, or what?
But so you're saying this story now is going to be talked about all next week on Radio Row.
Oh, that's one of the easiest ones.
Yeah. And that's what
and it
wanted.
Might be something that, I mean, I'll admit it, I go down there with, I've already cataloged like 25 different angles for the Super Bowl stuff. Like Griffin sent stuff over every day. I'm like, yeah, we're not going to get to it next week, but I will have a whole list. And there might be some stuff that we use as, you know, common themes on Radio Row. And that one, that's a good one. So Cam's doing a good job. I'll give you an example of where we miss. And there are going to be two examples today. So we've got the NFL Pro Bowl games coming up. And we've done the same thing for about 15 years on sports talk and sports TV.
The Pro Bowl. The All-Star game. Who cares?
And it hit me about 5 years ago. This is getting stupid. We are in a bubble. Sports radio people, writers, TV sports people, we are in a bubble. Like, I get access to almost everyone in some form or fashion. So it is not, I'm not trying to sound arrogant, but it is not spectacular for me to be around pro athletes, right? For the average fan.
Right.
Who, many have been priced out of NFL games. Many can't go to NBA games. To be in the presence of a professional athlete is freaking bonkers. People go crazy. And Griffin, you were one of them. What happened now? Who got named to the Pro Bowl games? Another quarterback? Has someone backed out?
I can't believe I'm spacing on his name. Rookie quarterback with the Patriots.
Drake May.
Oh my goodness, Drake May. It pissed me off that I can't remember. So yeah, Drake May is now in the Pro Bowl games, despite his Patriots going only winning two games this season.
But you realize after they name or they invite people, after that it's not so much an award or merit-based. This has now become a local event in the city that hosted and a TV show. And that's what it was when they played real football. And for years people were like, who cares? Stupid. They don't tackle. There's no deep. People care. The average fan cares. They wouldn't keep doing it if they didn't get TV viewers and they didn't get people to spend money at the events.
Right.
Why? We keep doing it. Griffin's doing it. We're going to hear sports people do it. Before this weekend, I was listening to one of my favorite shows. I mention it often. I love Doug Gottlieb, but I listened to college radio on Sirius XM, and it was like Ben Hartsock is like, why do we do this? This is stupid. He's with Matt McCall, a former coach, and they're doing, like, you guys sound like you're 78 years old and trolls on the internet. If you don't care, that's fine. People clearly do. I'm kind of interested in how they tweak it the entire way. And this is not the host group today to embrace this, but there used to be a couple of shows on TV. One was called The Superstars. One was called The Battle of the Network Stars. And it was like TV people and current day and older athletes, and they're just, you know, they're doing obstacle courses and just, it was goofy.
Yeah.
You know, it's Robert Conrad, it was this guy with a battery on his shoulder, tough guy, you know, swimming against Elkie Summer. Whoever our stars are now, right? You watch Hollywood Squares, I just saw that the other day. And that's kind of what they're playing off of, and they've got a bunch of skills competitions.
Right.
I don't know that I will carve out time to watch it because I think I'm traveling. But if I see it or I see highlights, I'll watch. Why do we always have to be like, I don't care, so no one cares?
I don't know. Too cool for all of this little extra stuff. But you're right. The average fan does really like it. And especially when your city is actually hosting it, it's a big deal. And they were showing clips from 2 years ago, and I saw the Las Vegas ballpark in the background, and I was like, oh my God, that's so cool. I forgot that the Pro Bowl was here 2 years ago before the Super Bowl. So Yeah, we got to embrace it. Russell Wilson's in it too now, right? And people are really mad about that.
Oh, are they really?
Well, yeah, the comments are pretty mad about that.
He's like exactly what I'm describing. It doesn't have to be completely merit-based. He is a star that's bigger than football because of his marriage, because of some of the stuff he's done.
Yep.
So if fans want to see him, I'm telling you, I think it's an age thing. I think as you get older, you get more grumpy. People in sports, I don't want to hear from any of them their take on the NBA All-Star game. Or listen, I would love LeBron to be in the dunk contest. He's got his reasons. I don't understand why. But the NBA is the same thing. Like, oh, this is, I can't watch. This is so bad. Like, and literally, they're doing the best dunks in the history of basketball. Someone could jump from half court and dunk, like from half court, and they'd be like, boring. They're just people. People get programmed to kind of start to dislike a sport or not be wowed by the athleticism and the superstardom, and they're turned off. But there's still an audience there. Griffin.
I understand.
Sorry, man. The normies like myself, we still get excited.
I'm a traditionalist, Steve. I miss when the Pro Bowl was a badge of honor for these guys and only the best of the year got to go. And I get what you're saying, though. That doesn't necessarily mean the Pro Bowl has to go away because it's not, you know, the prestigious award it used to be. If it was up to me, if I could have one little request to Roger, I would say, hey, let's just not call it the Pro Bowl anymore. Let's call it the NFL dodgeball or the NFL, athletic event, Super Bowl event. Let's call it something like that because it really is just, like you said, it's a star-studded event. It's a normal people who don't get to be around these athletes get to come out, get to watch these guys, be around them, see them perform, have fun. It's a great thing. But let's establish that this is no longer a merit-based accomplishment in the NFL. Well,
there doesn't have to be an announcement. I just told you it is. Okay, that's what it is now. It's not merit-based. So Cofield decides. See, I just said it's not merit-based. They're going to play dodgeball. That's true, right?
That is true.
So are you annoyed that Russell Wilson's in the game?
Not at all.
If you talk to anyone, just steal this from me. If you talk to anyone who's annoyed Russell Wilson is in this weekend, go, he's playing dodgeball. Watch Russell Wilson get hit right in the face with a 78-mile-an-hour or whatever, the mini volleyball. That's fun.
I think Griffin doesn't want it on any of these athletes' Wikipedia page when you scroll down and it says 3-time Pro Bowler.
Just because. I know I got some Patriot fan buddies, and I just know in the next few years they're going to keep saying, our rookie quarterback's better than your rookie quarterback. He went to the Pro Bowl. That doesn't mean anything.
Oh, my God. If that gets weaponized, give me a break. All right, on the way back, the Raiders are making some moves, some familiar faces. Looks like they're going to be in place at the coordinator positions. We'll talk about how Pete Carroll is doing in the early build of the Vegas Raiders.
Now back to Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Alex is here, Alex White, second place finisher in the Circa Invitational, top female handicapper in the world. It's Cofield, Victory Burger, Overhang, looking down on the greatest sports book in the world, the three-story Circa sports book. Came out hot, fired up. Some really critiques for Griffin. But good opinions, Griff. Good job, Alex. So I got to get some... It's kind of hard. Sometimes it can be hard to elicit strong opinions when teams are kind of staying the same, unless you hate it. So the Raiders appear to be going with familiar faces at DC for sure, maybe OC. Patrick Graham could be a three-term DC. With the Raiders.
It's probably good to have some familiarity in there, right? And not just go, I mean, unless you want to just start fresh and new. But the defense wasn't really the problem. And he did pretty good with a lot of injuries and filling in rookies and did the best he could on that side of the ball. So I'm not mad about it. And who's kind of the face of the Raiders right now? Max Crosby. And he might have had a say in this and wanted him or liked him. So they decided to stick with it. But... You were more on the side of going completely fresh, new start?
I'm not anti-Patrick Graham, so I don't have a giant problem with it. And I know he's very well regarded around the league, and he had interviews for head coach, interviews for DC. I think it'll be interesting to hear about how this came together and how philosophically. That's the weird part is, I just mentioned, he's a guy who's going to survive three regimes. Obviously, AP knew him, worked with him, so he kept him around. Started with Ziegler and McDaniels. And now I wonder how Pete Carroll's defensive philosophies mesh with Graham. Hopefully, they're all copacetic. They're ready to go. I don't think you hire the guy. It's got to be. While I don't want Pete Carroll to make, 55 or 60% of the GM decisions, he has to have a say.
Right.
So that's where we're at. But I think most Raiders fans, I think a lot of Raiders media are like, Patrick Graham's pretty good. Now, the OC thing with Daryl Bevel, clearly they're familiar with each other, Pete Carroll and Bevel. Bevel has moved on because Pete Carroll moved on. I don't know that his offenses were ever dynamic or big yard gainers, but they did the most important thing, and that is score.
Yeah.
And they don't have the personnel right now to run the philosophy that the Seahawks did, but I'm guessing they're going to adjust the roster. They've got plenty of money, high draft slots. So I don't hate it. I'll also admit sometimes I get caught up in the fresh and the new. Maybe too much. You know?
Yeah. I mean, look at his resume. He has been to so many different teams and been a quarterback coach, been an OC at so many different spots. So I think that's a good thing to have, too.
And sometimes you hear a name, and then you look back, and you're like, oh, man, he was in Seattle forever. Maybe they got a little stagnant at the end. But the thing is, most of his run, they were very good, and the Raiders haven't been very good at anything. So it's also realize where you've been and what hires could be.
Right.
That if someone is, 70% of what you wanted, that's a lot better than what you've had. And, listen, if Pete Carroll doesn't work with, a 32-year-old wunderkind, then he should have a say in that.
Yeah, I agree. And I'm sure he has an idea of where he wants to go with this, and he fits in there nicely. Now, I think that is enough of the bringing in his old guys. And
I think there's going to be more. I think there's going to be a lot. Well, you have to realize there's a, I'm sure it's dozens and dozens and dozens deep of the Pete Carroll coaching tree.
Yeah.
That not only worked directly with him, but then worked under the tree or branches off the tree. So I would guess a lot of the tree is going to be somehow related to Pete Carroll, and it could be like three or four names down the line. We're up in about 10 minutes. We're going to talk to Xavier Pope, a bunch of stuff to get into in the NBA, a couple legal questions for him as well, but we'll spend a few minutes breaking down what happened last night with UNLV on the road. Basketball team loses third straight at Utah State. Mad rush at the end, but they can't pull it out.
It's Cofield and Company, live from Victory Burger, inside the Circa Resort and Casino on ESPN, Las Vegas.
All right, I'm here with Kevin Kruger. Well, first of all, let's talk about defense, because down the last 10 minutes, you guys played good defense. They came out with 6-3, big run. What'd you do well on defense?
We were just more active. You saw we had a couple guys there that were pointing Brown, blaming people, trying to do anything and everything they could to not take any accountability and ownership in the result of a play. And it's unacceptable. So we're done with it. So you're going to see a lineup out there that cares about each other and plays for each other. And when the guys did that, they had active hands and good, quick feet and talked to each other. We had a really good 10 or 12 minutes.
Offensively, they were pushing way out. Just simply more action in the lane, getting it to the paint. Is that the key?
Yeah, I think, hopefully, with a crowd like this and an environment like this, I think that feeds into that, that first punch that they have, which they did a great job of, jumped out to a quick lead, hit some open threes, kind of had us stagnant because they were at a really high energy level and fed off the crowd. Hopefully, as the game kind of settles a little bit, we'll be able to find some gaps and some creases and make some plays from there.
There you go. Kevin Kruger at the half of last night's game. Rebels were just getting beat up to start. They were down 22-7. They fought back to 33-24. Probably should have been a four-point game, amazingly. But the first 10 minutes, you look at the end of the game, and that kind of did them in. They actually tied it. They played better basketball in the second half. They tied it at, I think it was 56 with about 6 minutes left. But then they got very sloppy with the ball, 13-3 run, and Utah State moves to 19 wins on the season, only one loss in the conference to UNLV here. But now the Rebels are looking at 3 straight losses and 5-5 in the conference.
I watched some of it. I thought it was pretty impressive because UNLV definitely was controlling the pace and playing at a slower pace than Utah State wants to. But I did see some of the sloppiness in there. Wow, he was pretty fired up. So do we know what players? Did you see?
Yeah, Jalen Bedford didn't play much. And then Bear Cherry was kind of select spots here and there. Yeah, their defense, it was terrible the first 10 minutes. And then on top of that, Utah State couldn't miss. So they started out 5-9 from 3. They got out of the gate 6-11. And then the rest of the way, they were like 3-17. But you can't spot a 15-point lead because all of the – I think you look at it and it's like, oh, well, they tied it. I mean, great. Now they can win the game. But all of the energy that's given out to get it to 56s,
right.
they kind of gassed for a couple minutes. And, again, you know, the three ball, some turnovers by UNLV. And here's the thing. And he even said it after the game. He's like, I'm not into moral victories. Like, good job that they came back. But for fans of the program, you see what they can do. But they're not winning close games. So now they've had 3 straight losses, I think 2-2-5 were the margins. They should have a better record, but they don't. So now they got to close the season like gangbusters.
Yeah.
Or it's going to be another, you know, disappointing season where they don't get to the semis of the finals of the Mountain West Conference. And at this point, they have to get to the finals and they got to win it. And can they? That's the problem. It's been the same story in about, I'd have to go back, 7 of the last 9 years, right? Menzies had a rough year, Ott's had a rough year, but they've constantly been within distance. And then they can't play their best basketball against a really good team in the tournament.
Yeah. And we see that often. I mean, with them already beating Utah State, and last year it was SDSU, right? And then they met them in the tournament and
dogfight, overtime, fell short.
Yep.
Got to win one of these times, one of these years. Got to advance. And we'll see, because now the seed will be in question. They'll probably have to play on the first day unless they have a tremendous run. That's also tiring. So I know everyone, you know, around that program is super frustrated. I know the fans are really fired up. Man, well, let's see how it plays out. Hopefully they can bounce back here, and they got 10 more games in conference. Probably need to post like a 7-3 or 8-2 to really feel good about themselves, and we'll see what the postseason looks like.
Here we go, yo. Here we go, yo. So what's the scenario?
Lawyer and host of Suit Up News, Xavier Pope, joins Cofield and Company now.
All right, let's come out of the gate strong with EP. He's on with us every Thursday. Xavier, what's up, buddy?
Pretty good. How you doing, Steve?
Pretty good. I saw some great stories, some great angles to get into with you up on your threads. Follow Xavier Pope up on threads. You know, I saw the fires. I know Southern California decently well. I didn't realize Altadena had the kind of history it does. And you found a story that says Magic Johnson's going to really do a whole lot in terms of money in trying to get that city rebuilt.
Yeah, I mean, Altadena is a place where, you know, they're redlining. And that was in the nation's past in terms of excluding African-Americans from buying homes. They were able to have a well-to-do community of black professionals and go through generations of passing homes down. A good friend of mine, Dr. Nola Haynes, she is a professor over at Georgetown. A lot of her family comes from that area, and it's great to see them getting support in the area from Magic Johnson. He's just used his platform to be able to do this in communities of color across the country, whether across income spectrums.
You mentioned previous practices that were discriminatory. We're in a very interesting era now. Identifying oneself can be tricky. I saw there's a little bit of a, not firestorm, but a discussion over Madison Keys in tennis, who kind of went the OJ route, and not that route, but when OJ back in the day was like, listen, I'm not anything, I'm just OJ.
Yeah, as he said, I'm just Madison. And I mean, almost word for word, just changing out the name in terms of that, about, you know, her position and her, how, you know, how she's been able to, you know, make strides on the tennis court. But unfortunately, that I said that was a colorism issue, because if she was observably black, that's not something that she would even speak in that manner. You know, you see someone a little bit at that, the Miami Dolphins coach, Mike McDaniel, and how he's handled questions about his race as well. And so it gets a little bit complicated when people aren't observably black and they choose what name to call themselves. OJ definitely was. but it was still in terms of how he positions himself to be able to feel like that was the best branding for him.
Well, we've got a couple African-American quarterbacks in the Super Bowl. The guy who's won the titles most recently and is on a hell of a run is Patrick Mahomes. I wanted you to lean into, or maybe just say it's ridiculous, we're going to do this a couple times today, about the claim that there is fatigue in dealing with the Chiefs' greatness. Do you buy that? Is there any party that's like, no, I'm not watching the game, I'm tired of the Chiefs?
You heard that a lot from Mad Dog. And, you know, I know people are going to watch the game. I just reminiscing of Tom Brady and the New England Patriots. You know, I guess they kind of like to keep it interesting because a lot of those came down to the end. And I think that's what we've seen in Kansas City. A lot of these games have been close. Whether they won 18 consecutive one-score games dating back to last season. And they've been able to make these games exciting enough for audience to watch them, knowing that at the end of the game, just like Tom Brady, the second now all-time on Mount Rushmore quarterback, Patrick Mahomes the second, is going to drive and make this team win or do something to win the game. And people just have to sit there and watch there and love that. And that will still get rated.
I love that point so much. Like, let's not forget, when you step back, don't just go, the Chiefs won. Like, remember how they won and that so many of the games are gut-wrenching. You can root against them. You can root for them. They are really, really interesting. And the other part of this is, I'm telling you, a lot of people out there lead, you know, life is tough. Working every day is tough. My job's not tough. But in general, like, working is tough. You want a little break, a reprieve. Super Bowl parties for people, it's like one of the chances during the year that you get to freaking let loose. People aren't giving up their Super Bowl Sunday.
They're not. That's a holiday in America. Getting a bunch of your friends together, people making the different dishes, having the different parties. I mean, that's now a holiday in this country. It's synonymous with the game. And so people don't even go to watch the game itself. People want to watch the commercials. People want to watch that Super Bowl halftime show that will be Kendrick Lamar this year. And so people have so many reasons why to watch this giant spectacle, and that's why it garners over 115 million fans in terms of watching.
So let's talk about a football story locally. It's Cofield, Alex White. David Pope is with us here on this Thursday. I saw that you noticed it. Mark Davis, press conference, they're introducing Pete Carroll. He does a couple interviews on the side, and he has some more to say about John Gruden and his exit from the Raiders, and he's not letting it go. He is still really angry, thinking the NFL screwed over him and Gruden.
You know, the politics behind Gruden, though, was about him saying things that were racist, right? Sexist, and homophobic. And so now we have an era of, you know, right-wing politics that are pervading those that have a lot of wealth, and letting loose on that, and DEI policies going by the wayside. We see people like Mark Davis able to make these statements freely without getting any real pushback on it. And so I feel as if, why relitigate this issue? It's already been decided. Your team is moving forward. Why are you looking backwards? And you see that in a lot of these spheres of society, people trying to relitigate history and give a different version of the facts.
Yeah, I think for MD, as we call him here, there's a lot of remorse because a lot of people think that Gruden could have been saved had there just been an immediate suspension by the Raiders. Maybe it would have blown over. Gruden could still be the coach. And I think that's what Mark Davis believes, right or wrong. We got it. You know, these showdowns, man. You know, Goodell against the Davis family, that's legendary. We got one building here with Jimmy Butler and Pat Riley. And Pat Riley is an old war horse. He ain't going to freaking back down here. What do you think about what's going on?
I just think that Jimmy Butler has forced his way out of every situation he's been, right? Forced his way out of Chicago, forced his way out of Minnesota, forced his way out of Philadelphia, and he's now forcing his way out of Miami. He's specialized labor. He's free and right in this country to move around however he wants. Pat Riley himself runs a tight ship over there. So, you know, there's a clash of egos there. And ultimately, that's leading to Jimmy Butler deciding to get out of there. Will Miami get back some sort of real value in return because of the situation so far gone? I think that's probably the bigger question in the matter. And will Jimmy Butler even suit up this year if the Heat try to call his bluff and say, we're not going to move you at all?
So we got to play this again because this is one of my favorite pieces of audio, because this is the way a lot of people argue and just keep saying the same thing over and over again. And maybe you can shed light on it, because I don't really get it, and I'm usually on Shaq's side, but this was Shaq late last week talking about Butler, and he's got Butler's back, and Barkley and Kenny Smith are like, dude, what are you talking about? Fire this?
You know what? At 35, what if I tear a knee and get hurt?
You still gonna make $50 million. You got $50 million coming.
Bro, I want more, man. You keep talking about 2 years. What about year three, four, five, and six? Bro, I want more.
Because if you were that good at that time, your extension would have been longer.
No.
You signed a deal that you thought was great at the time.
And Shaq, during that block, EP, must have said, I want more, like 15 times. That was his answer to the question repeatedly. Do you get Shaq's side?
Isn't this the same crew? Charles Barkley said he would retire if he didn't get the type of situation he wanted in his own contract.
Isn't that funny how Barkley, we hear a lot of stuff from Barkley and you're like, dude, that was you!
Come on, dude. Charles Barkley is the biggest hypocrite, man. And then, you don't know where he's going to jump on the side. It depends on where he rode out of the pen that day.
So do you kind of get what Shaq is arguing in terms of, I'm very pro-labor, but this is one of those where I'm like, I don't know, man. Like, you signed a deal. Like, you at least got to play. If you want to move on, like, play with the bosses a little bit. Like, retain your value. I'm just confused by the tactic here.
Well, it's one thing to not play, right? It's another to dog it in games and where he would show some sort of statistic or analytics that was showing, like, how he was dogging it. Now, that has an impact on your trade value with teams. Now, will teams look past that and say, we don't care, we want you to be able to contribute towards the championship run? That remains to be seen, Steven. I think that's the bigger question, is how easy it will be for the Miami Heat to move him, get the headache off their hands, or if they want to go through this battle of egos for the rest of the season.
I got to tell you, I want to keep building on this. Shaq at 7'1 and whatever, 375 with the voice and the, like, I want more, is like one of the scariest things I've ever seen. Because I started to visualize, like, Shaq at a buffet. And they're like, Shaq, you've been here for 5 hours. I want more. And you're like, all right, we'll go cook more. Or he's at your house and he's like, I want more pie. Like, Shaq, I don't have more pie. Please, don't kill me.
Yeah, I have a really enormous brother, big, and I've seen him eat like 4 pieces, 5 cheeseburgers, and then a whole like Grand Slam special. And so I can only imagine with Shaq at the buffet tearing
that. He's like the modern day Andre the Giant. He's so large, he's so loud. Speaking of that, I don't know if you've seen what's been happening lately, but people are going at Wemby at 7'5". I saw someone the other day with Zach Edey, and Zach Edey's 7'4 and like 320, and someone tried to challenge him. And, well, Draymond did a couple weeks ago, and Zach Edey's like, let's go. Like, they're just kind of freaks of nature where you're like, what is going to happen if someone really tries to fight this person?
Well, that was the Clippers. They were playing the Spurs, and the Clippers beat the Spurs, and Zubac, who's shorter than him, you know, pushes him. He did apologize for it, though, Steve, but Wemby's 235, man. He's a smaller guy, so guys are going to try to undercut him to be able to get his height down until he gets the bulk up in the gym. I know he moves around pretty swiftly, and the teams are trying to get it out of his hands, but he has to bulk up a little bit more, Steve.
Of course. Well, I mean, when guys are that big, you know, you don't want to let them just dominate and flow around the court freely. You do try to knock them off, but I'm glad to see both of them as younger guys are stepping up to the physicality. EP, have a great weekend, man. We appreciate the time. We'll talk to you soon.
Love you guys.
There he is. Love you, Xavier. Someone's got to say it. It's always awkward at the end. Griffin, you never step up. Come on, man. What's your problem? Hour 4. Check that. 4 o'clock hour is on the way as we're live here at Circa.